before Velis's own meeting. He was wearing a broad grin, his chest vibrating as he quietly chuckled at some unspoken joke. "Nothing better to do?" Velis shrugged. She was leaning up against the wall right next to the office door. "I had other business nearby, and I don't really have enough time to go do anything else before my appointment. Figured I'd just relax here for a bit, try to guess at what the Colonel is going to want."
"A guessing game, is it?"
He brought up his left hand, touching two fingers to his forehead.
"I do enjoy those."
Velis smiled at the gesture.
"Don't we all?"
"I'll be curious what you come up with. Perhaps we can chat about it later. In the meantime, however, my meeting awaits."
He half bowed and then stepped closer and knocked on the door. It opened a moment later, revealing a young man who was carrying a handful of files in his left hand.
"Come in, Applicant Sterling."
The young man gave Velis a quizzical look when he noticed her to the side of the door. She gave him a friendly wave.
"I'm the next one. I got here a bit early."
The young man gave a slight frown, shaking his head, and retreated deeper into the room. Velis got a quick glimpse of Colonel Wyndham sitting behind a desk toward the back of the chamber before the door closed.
"Well, this should be even more interesting than I expected. Listen."
The mental command enhanced her sense of hearing. It was one of the simplest Dominion of Sound spells and the first one she had mastered. The more difficult part was making it useful. Velis closed her eyes, envisioning a half-sphere in front of her, open at her back.
"Filter."
With her enhanced hearing, she would have normally heard even the slightest nearby sounds coming from any direction. The second spell created a field that dispersed sounds that passed through it, which would prevent them from reaching her ears. The combined effect of the two spells would enable her to listen intently, but only in the desired direction. Initially, she had regretted that Landon Ortalian hadn't been right before her. Now, after having seen Sterling's little gesture, she was excited to hear his conversation with the Colonel. Moments passed into minutes, and she heard nothing at all.
"God curse it. They must have the Wall Dominion bonded to prevent sound from leaving. Either that, or one of the people in there is actively preventing any sound from leaving the room."
She let her listen and filter spells fade. Maintaining them would have been a needless tax on her sense of hearing, and glanced at the nearby rooms. The room on the right belonged to another officer, Orin Dyer. The room on the left, however, didn't have a plaque to mark the owner. Velis tested the handle. It was unlocked. She looked down the hall in both directions, quickly determining that there was no one else in sight. She listened briefly at this door as well, but she couldn't hear anything within, nor could she determine if that was because of Sorceress Ward's or just because there was no one inside.
"This could get awkward if someone is inside."
Gritting her teeth, she turned the handle. The door led to an empty classroom, minimally lit due to large curtains blocking the windows. Taking a deep breath, Velis stepped inside and shut the door behind her.
"If someone comes in, I'll just say I wanted a quiet place to think while waiting for my appointment," she decided.
Walking to the right wall of the room, she began to work.
"Listen. Filter."
She pressed a palm against the wall, instantly feeling the pulse of the Dominion of Sound from the opposite side. The Dominion bond flowed like liquid across the wall's surface, absorbing and dispersing sound that passed within. The wall itself was imperfect, however. The citadel was ages old, and cracks and furrows marred the surface of the once pristine barrier. The Dominion bond faltered in these locations, allowing for tiny pockets of sound to be trapped within for moments before they faded away. Her own footsteps echoed loudly as she slowly advanced along the walls, pressing a hand against the stone. Finding the flaws in the wall from the opposite side would be more difficult, but the nature of the defense would make it obvious any time she came in contact with any sound. She paused immediately as she felt a fragment of vibration in her hand, drawing it through the wall and releasing it into her half-sphere of filtered sound.
"It wasn't my idea, in truth. My older sister told me I needed to make something of myself, to do some good for the family."
Sterling's voice. She quickly shifted her filter to ensure that no sound echoed back into the other room. Now that she had found a weakness in the room's sonic armor, she could draw the sound through and release it almost as quickly as the people within spoke.
"So you're not here of your own volition, then?"
The colonel's tone was measured, but Velis caught a clear edge to it.
"Oh, I wouldn't say that. It was her idea at first, but I think this is the right place for me. I can do a lot of good here."
"And what sort of good would you expect to do as a member of the Paladins of Taos?"
There was a brief pause before Sterling responded.
"Well, I think I'd be best with the Eritar branch, to be honest. I enjoy talking to people and traveling, so I'd make a good messenger. I don't want to come across as too arrogant, but I'd also like to think I can slip into a hostile area without being noticed, which could help me accomplish important goals for the Paladins."
"Sounds like a fairly generic interview so far. Interesting that he's gunning for a specific branch at this early of a stage. I'm not sure if that's a good strategy." "I see. And why should I help you complete this test?"
Another pause.
"Well, I think I'm here for the right reasons. Some of the applicants don't seem very focused. Others seem like they're more here for the challenge of the competition than the goal of becoming a paladin. I'm here to be a paladin, Colonel."
"Thank you, Applicant Sterling."
Velis turned around and immediately headed to the classroom door. Opening it slowly, she glanced from side to side, but no one else was in the hallway. She swiftly moved back to her position outside of the door of Colonel Wyndham's office. From the colonel's tone, it was clear that the interview was about to conclude.
"That one was quick. Asphodel was in there a lot longer. Does that mean he failed?"
It was at least another minute before the door finally reopened. Sterling glanced at her, tipping his hat politely and wordlessly headed toward the Citadel's entrance. While the door was still open, Velis glanced within. The young man she had seen earlier was sitting in a chair at the left side of the colonel's desk, writing furiously. The colonel herself approached the door and smiled at Velis.
"I appreciate your punctuality, but you'll have to wait for your scheduled appointment time."
Velis saluted.
"Yes, ma'am."
The colonel closed the door.
"Well, I was hoping to get more information out of that, but at least I have some basics. I most likely missed the first question or two, but it sounds like a relatively straightforward question and answer session, at least for the part that Sterling went through. It's very plausible he failed at a certain point and didn't get all of the questions. So what am I going to say to the things she asked? It sounded like one of them was about why Sterling was interested in joining the Paladins. That's a fairly straightforward one. I'm here because of Landon, who followed Talion and Lydia down here."
"Which is a terrible answer. Shit.
Okay, straightforward doesn't always mean easy. What have I got? My family has been dedicated to Lissari for generations. That's a good one. House Jaldan has a good reputation, and I have relevant training as a healer, even if I never picked up the sorcery for it. Family tradition isn't a great answer by itself. Maybe being inspired by my ancestors and their dedication? That's a little better, at least."
She continued to ponder her options until the door reopened and the young file-bearing man beckoned her inside.
"Thanks,"
she said as he held the door open for her. Velis stepped within, following his gesture toward a seat across from the colonel. The younger man closed the door a few moments later, sitting down in the same chair she had seen before.
"Candidate Velis Jaldan,"
the colonel said, looking at a paper in front of her. Velis resisted the urge to glance at the contents of the paper, but she suspected it was the same file on her that Talion had discovered earlier, potentially with more recent notes.
"You've led a rather interesting life, considering your young age."
"Thank you, Colonel.
Let's get right to it. You get to ask me a single question about anything relating to the exams, and I'll give you an honest answer. After that, I'll ask you a series of questions, which you must answer honestly. I will know if you are lying. If you lie, you'll get a red flag immediately. If you provide me with honest answers that I find compelling, I will give you one of my remaining pins. Do you understand?"
Shit. She can sense the truth? That's going to make this a bit more of a challenge. She could be bluffing, but it's not really worth the risk. She's a Cytiran, and a high-ranking one at that. Having some kind of knowledge spell to read me isn't implausible at all.
"Yes, Colonel."
"You may ask your question first. I'll give you a minute or two to think about it."
Don't try to run up the clock by delaying until my next meeting, however. I appreciate creative problem-solving, but wasting my time would be rude.
I wouldn't do something like that. Talion might, though. He does love trying to game these tests.
Understood, Colonel. I will let you know when I've thought of my question.
In spite of her calm response, Velis's mind was whirling. There were a multitude of options that immediately came to mind.
She said the exams. That means it doesn't even have to be about this particular test. I could ask about virtually anything. Knowing my cumulative total up to this point could be good to know how much trouble I'm in, but ultimately it probably wouldn't be worth using up the question. Maybe I could ask what my biggest mistake has been so far so I can avoid repeating it, but I think I'm better off asking for something that's going to provide a direct and guaranteed benefit. I could ask for the best answers to this particular interview, or maybe just ask directly how I could earn a pin from her. One pin isn't exactly going to make or break this whole competition, though. I could ask for the locations of all the hidden pins within the city, but Asphodel is already going after them, and she already gave me her pin, so I shouldn't compete with her. I could ask about one of the tests after this one, something to give me a big edge for one of the future exams. That's tempting, but it might seem arrogant to assume I'm passing this one. Maybe I should ask for the answers to every question that the other candidates have already asked. That's a good one. Unfortunately, only a few people were in front of me, so it wouldn't necessarily be as useful as if I was one of the later interviews. That's probably along the right line of thinking. All right, I have my question.
Velis clenched her hands in her lap, unexpectedly tense. She wasn't used to being nervous talking to authority figures, but this particular competition was wreaking havoc on her nerves. She had to win.
Ask when ready.
The colonel waved with one hand for her to proceed.
What's the best advice related to any of the exams you can give me that you have not given to anyone else and do not expect to give to any of the other applicants?
The colonel's expression sank for a moment, and then she smiled.
That's a very good question, Miss Jaldon. I'll need a moment to think about it.
Velis nodded silently. The colonel folded her arms, leaning back slightly in her chair. Velis tried to take deep breaths as subtly as possible while she awaited the answer.
When the competition started, we told you all that the tradition dictates that the arbiters select one person for each branch. This is true, but it is also misleading. Most applicants believe that they must excel in a specific area to appeal to one arbiter or another, thinking of every other applicant as competition for that spot. This leads many to failure.
Velis quirked an eyebrow, continuing to listen. The colonel leaned a little bit closer, putting her hands on top of the table.
In truth, there have been years where not a single candidate has been selected. There have been other years, typically after great wars, that dozens of candidates are chosen. The arbiters will pick as many candidates as they deem worthy. The standards of what constitutes worthy vary from year to year, however, based on the needs of the organization as a whole. In recent years, we've only picked a few paladins per year from these tests. We are not at war, and the arbiters generally find that paladins who go through the entire process of being a squire are better at teamwork and more loyal to the organization.
Velis nodded. The logic was sound. The process of spending years as a squire was much more likely to weed out spies, as well as build loyalty and dedication between the squire and the paladins he or she worked with.
That's my answer. And now I have a question for you. What led you to ask that particular question?
That one was relatively easy, at least.
I thought about a lot of different options before I realized that you hadn't said anything about this interview being a secret. My plan was to try to get information that no one else would have, and then share it with the members of my platoon, unless I'm explicitly instructed not to at some point. Similarly, I can ask my platoon mates what they asked and learn whatever they learned.
Good. You mentioned your team members. Would you share that information with people outside of your own group?
A good question, and potentially a trick question.
I wasn't planning to, but I probably would if there was someone I trusted, or someone I wanted to pass.
And under what conditions would you want someone else to pass the exam?
Velis frowned. Sterling's questions had seemed a lot easier than these.
Really, it probably would depend on if I liked them. I'd like to have a better answer, but you wanted the truth.
The truth is what I'm looking for, Miss Jaldin. Now, how about the people within your own platoon? Would you share this information, or other advantages you might gain during the competition, equally with each member of your platoon?
Ouch. That one is a sucker punch.
No, most likely not. This isn't because I wish for anyone on my team to fail, nor would I deliberately sabotage anyone on my team, or anyone else. I'd be perfectly happy if everyone passed. But I came into these tests with friends, and I'm going to be biased toward helping them the most.
She paused for a moment, and then added,
Admittedly, I also owe Asphodel a favor, and I will take measures to pay that back.
The colonel nodded slowly.
Tell me about these friends of yours.
Velis bit her lip.
What's she looking for? Is she testing if I'll sabotage my friends?
Landon has been a friend of mine for years. We served together in the Queen's Guard back in Orlan. We've been through a lot of scrapes together and always came out on top. I couldn't ask for a better partner. I'm happy we were put in the same platoon.
I understand. You had some role in that.
Velis forced herself not to wince.
I did ask for us to be placed in the same platoon, yes.
Why?
Because I thought it'd be more fun, and I'd be more comfortable with him around, and we could help each other pass. I didn't want to compete against him.
But you do realize that you're competing against everyone, regardless of which platoon you're in?
Velis shook her head at that.
Yes and no. As long as we're in the same platoon, we can help each other out in group tests, as well as any other tests where we have a sufficient amount of contact to trade information. That's better than being stuck in a different barracks. And I'm expecting more contests where teams are pitted directly against each other in the future. Even if we're being evaluated as individuals, my teamwork with Landon will make us both look better.
That seems reasonable. And what about applicant Solaris?
What about Sal? What does she want me to say?
Solaris, I haven't known him as long, but we've been training together under Harrod, and I've enjoyed that. He's one of the best fighters here, and I think we complement each other well.
Do we? Is that really why?
The colonel raised an eyebrow, which made Velis cringe backward in her seat slightly. Velis wondered if the colonel had detected the hint of a lie, and she wondered if she had been lying to herself with that answer, too.
All right, Velis. What about the other members of your platoon? What's your evaluation of them?
Velis took a breath. This was slightly easier, at least. She could be professional.
Asphodel seems like she's going to go a long way. Her companions, Kolask and Teshval, call her an oracle. She has some kind of information-gathering sorcery abilities, which she can use subtly without incantations. I'm not sure what the extent of her abilities are yet, but from her listed score from the first test and the fact that she's still here, I suspect she's very capable.
Go on.
Kolask is extraordinarily protective of Asphodel, which is somewhat silly given that she's a much better fighter than he is. At first I assumed that Kolask and Teshval were her guards. I think most of the platoon still assumes that. I've seen them exercise and spar, though, and seen how they treat her. It's more like Kolask and Teshval worship her, and Asphodel doesn't like the attention.
Interesting observation. Why do you think they worship her, as you say? And do you mean that in the literal sense, that they believe she is a deity?
Velis shook her head. After years of living in Orlan, she had seen enough prayers to false gods to recognize them easily.
Not quite. It's more like they believe she's a messenger of the gods, or something along those lines. As for which gods, well, I've never really figured that much out.
And why not? Have you asked them about their religion?
Velis shrugged.
We're all here to join an order of religious paladins. I think asking them if they worship Asphodel might come across as a bit of an insult.
After a moment, she hastily added,
And I'm not telling you any of this to make them look bad. They very well might be extremely dedicated to the Taos Pantheon for all I know. I've seen people look at Solaris, like he's some kind of divine messenger too. Yes, I'm quite familiar with the problems that have arisen from Solaris carrying that sword around. I believe I've asked you enough about your platoon for the time being. Let's talk a bit more about you. Why are you here?
Finally, a question she had prepared for.
I spent my childhood hearing about the exploits of famous paladins and priests. As you know, I'm a child of House Jaldan, albeit not by blood. I was adopted at a young age. My family treated me very well, but since I'm not of their blood, I didn't stand to inherit anything. They gave me a better education than I deserved, everything from healing to swordplay, enough to carve out my own path in life. House Jaldan has traditionally served Lissari, and I learned her prayers when I was young. It's taken me a while to get here, but I think this was the path I was meant for.
You mentioned prayers to Lissari, but I understand that you served the false gods of Orlan for some time. Quite directly, in fact, as one of the guards of Queen Regent Tylin. How do you reconcile that?
Velis was silent for some time, staring down into her lap. For several moments, the only noise was the scratching of the scribe's quill.
I wanted to believe that there were new gods. Gods that wanted to serve humanity directly. It's a compelling notion, isn't it? Even the Taos Pantheon were once mortal. It didn't seem impossible. And if the new gods wanted to help people, I felt like keeping them safe from harm was important.
You wanted to protect them?
Colonel Wyndham sounded surprised. It was the first hint of a strong emotion that had slipped into her tone. Velis nodded.
I don't believe the gods are invincible, Colonel. Even in the stories of the Taos Pantheon, they've struggled against threats. Other gods like Valian, monsters like Deasmodin, and the Zixian Emperor, and even powerful sorcerers. These fledgling gods, or false gods as they turned out to be, were certain to be vulnerable. If they had been true deities, they would have probably been in even greater danger, since the true gods might have sought to destroy them.
And if the Taos Pantheon had tried to destroy these false gods you were protecting?
A memory flashed across Velis's mind.
A glint of silver catching the morning light, tearing through her mail and flesh. A scar that still itched on her skin.
I would have fought to stop them.
The colonel nodded, seeming oddly satisfied.
What changed your mind about the gods of Orlan?
I had a fight with a good friend of mine. It gave me a lot to think about. Things I had refused to face before. I had to face the fact that I had been idealistic, and that I had been letting myself be manipulated for quite some time.
Velis tensed her jaw.
Never again.
That's a satisfactory answer.
The colonel turned toward the scribe.
Squire Aldrich, retrieve the sigil of Lysandry for applicant Jaldan.
The squire stood and moved to a box at the back of the room. Velis breathed an audible sigh of relief.
Thank you, Colonel. You mentioned Lissari, but I think her sister suits you best. You did well in the assassin test. You were one of the best of our applicants this year, in fact, and your family would have been proud of your healing skills. Your answers here confirm what I suspected from your behavior in that test, however. Your priority is protecting the ones you care for the most. While Lissari is the healer of wounds, it is Lysandry who sets all aside to sacrifice herself for others. I believe that this may be your path, applicant Jaldan.
Lysandry? The martyr? I suppose there might be some truth to that.
The scribe handed the pin to the colonel, and she in turn offered it to Velis. The former Queen's Guard took the pin gingerly, staring at the medal for a moment before closing her palm around it.
Thank you, Colonel. You've given me a lot to think about. Good luck, Miss Jaldan. You are dismissed.
The sharp edges of the sigil dug into Velis's skin, but the cold touch of the metal felt like victory. Velis had pinned all three of her sigils to the right breast of her uniform tunic. After having had the experience of being questioned by the colonel, the Lysandry pin felt far more significant than the others.
And Asphodel just gave me her pin, no questions asked. She must have had a very good reason for that. Either that, or she's just not as invested in this as some of us are.
After the interview, she met briefly with Landon. Colonel Wyndham had never told her not to discuss the tests with anyone else, so she followed through with her plan and filled Landon in on everything she had been asked. He was suitably grateful, but she also warned him that she suspected the colonel tailored her questions for each individual applicant.
"Three pins already," Landon mumbled. "I've got some catching up to do."
She left him long before his interview to seek out Talion, but the swordsman was nowhere to be found. At the barracks, Teshval mentioned that he thought he had seen Solaris leaving the military base for town.
"Well, I'll have to see what kind of antics he's up to later, then. It's his fault if he fails the interview because he wasn't here for my amazing advice."
As an afterthought, she told Teshval about her interview, and he seemed surprisingly grateful for the information.
"Maybe part of the colonel's point was that I should get to know the other members of my platoon better. I should try that sometime."
She spent some time looking for Lieutenant Torrent, but he wasn't anywhere near the barracks or the mess hall.
"Maybe he's hiding with his pin. He seems like the type to enjoy hide-and-seek. I'll see if I can track him down later if I need the extra sigil."
When it was nearly noon, she headed toward the Teldamere Lake, pondering what Lieutenant Morris had in store.
"Lysandre is the goddess of water and ice, not just protecting others. A lake makes sense. Maybe he's going to have us swim out to rescue people who are pretending to be drowning."
She had done a few exercises like that during her medical training back home in Valeria.
"Well, if the colonel is right about my proclivity toward protection, I should be pretty good at this, too."
Velis counted at least 20 other applicants waiting by the side of the lake by the time she arrived. A pair of massive paladins of Taos banners marked the meeting spot, and she could see that most of the candidates were searching the lake with their eyes. Lieutenant Morris stood at the lake's edge, speaking too quietly for Velis to hear from a distance. She examined the area as she approached the group. Most of the other applicants were still wearing their uniforms and weapons. Velis had realized that this particular activity was outside of the base's gates, and thus she wasn't obligated to wear her uniform. Thus, she had prepared according to her best guess at the activity. She didn't have any traditional swimwear handy, so she was wearing a simple short-sleeved shirt and shorts. She kept her longsword belted on her hip just in case the challenge involved some sort of combat. The lake's waters were pristine, purified through centuries of maintenance by the city's water sorcerers. It was the smallest of three lakes within the city, and the only one that did not feed into Velthrin's aqueducts. Some sections of the lake were walled off to serve as water sources for parts of the city where the aqueducts were less convenient. Other spots on the lake were privately owned, while still others were available to the public. This particular location was on land owned by the priesthood of Taos, but locals were generally allowed to swim and fish there. At the moment, Velis could see armed paladins guarding both sides of the bank, displaying prominent flags bearing the seven runes of the Taos Pantheon. She could see tiny ships on the lake in the distance, but there were none nearby. Glancing at the lake itself, Velis could see the reason why Lieutenant Morris had picked this particular spot. Majestic marble pillars extruded from the lake's surface about 100 yards into the water. They looked to be the remnants of some long sunken structure, most likely an old temple. As Velis moved to join the others on the shore of the lake, she noted Eridus standing in the crowd. She gave him a friendly wave, but he just looked away.
Rude.
She shook her head, searching through the applicants until she felt a tap on her shoulder. She spun around, finding Landon behind her.
"You should be more careful. I could have been an assassin or something."
Velis rolled her eyes.
"I'm pretty sure the 20-odd paladins would have jumped on any assassin before they managed anything dangerous. Or at a minimum, you'd have stood out like a lamppost in the night like that guy."
She pointed a finger at the wandering war looming over the crowd in his ever-present black cloak. Landon grinned.
"I sometimes wonder if that's the same cloak, or if he just has dozens of identical ones."
"One of life's greatest mysteries. Also, I'm curious how he gets away with never wearing a uniform."
"Maybe he's got it on under there."
"It sort of defeats the point of a uniform if you always wear something that completely covers it."
"Fair."
"Well, if you've been here long enough to get bored and sneak up on innocent young girls, what have you figured out about the test?"
Pretty sure some of the pins are going to be up on those pillars,
Landon pointed, but the pillars were obvious enough even without his gesture.
If I had to guess, he'll have some of the others underwater.
And it'll be a race to find them?
That doesn't sound too bad. Kind of wish we had Asphodel, though. Landon shrugged.
Don't think we're gonna need an oracle, so much as someone who can help us outpace Lysen.
She caught Landon's gaze, catching Lysen standing next to his sister on the side of the lake.
He's right. Lysen has a huge advantage here. He can probably just freeze the water to make himself a path, or make a wall to block the rest of us.
I think I can get out to a pillar before he has a chance to do that. Want to go for a ride?
The swordsman folded his arms.
You think you can carry me with one of those motion bursts?
Well, I've never tried, but it sounds kind of fun.
He shook his head fervently.
Not a good time for practice. I really don't want to end up splatted against one of those things. You've got practice with landing from that kind of height. I don't.
Bah, you're such a baby sometimes.
Fine, I'll see if I can't get you a spare pin.
And I'll get a dustpan to peel what's left of you off the pillar.
You're always so romantic.
She paused, seeing Lieutenant Banks pick up one of the banners and wave it in the air.
Looks like the lieutenant is about to talk.
She glanced around the area one last time.
And Sal still isn't here.
Listen up, everyone!
The crowds went silent as the lieutenant shouted. Most of the applicants turned to face him, although a couple continued to scan the water.
Here are the rules. I'm sure you can all see the remains of Velryn's glory out in the water. We've hidden three chests, each containing a sigil out in the ruins under the water.
He pointed to the pillars next.
And if you're feeling especially adventurous, there are two more boxes at the top of two of those pillars. They're the ones furthest from the shore. Finally, the last two pins will be rewarded for retrieving a banner from one of the groups of paladins on the other side of the lake.
He pointed to two groups of armored men and women that were waving banners enthusiastically.
Without getting the banners wet. If it's wet when it gets here, the banner won't count, and I'll hold on to one of the sigils for later.
Velis narrowed her eyes at the figures across the lake.
Looks like at least 300 yards. Even I can't jump that far.
And go!
The crowd stood and stared for a mere moment before the first applicant dove into the water. That got the others moving.
No time to plan.
Velis maneuvered toward the waterline, took several steps back, and then began to run.
Surge!
The blast catapulted her into the sky, far past the swimmers, and high enough to see a blur as a black cloaked figure fluttered right past her.
Oh, not a chance, buddy. Surge!
The second boost sent her flying faster, nearly paralleling the wandering war, who turned his head to face her. As she continued in her upward arc, he raised his left hand above his head and swept it downward in a flourishing motion. Velis plummeted.
What the f-
The former Queen's Guard swiftly oriented herself, keeping her feet together and holding her breath. She smashed into the surface of the water moments later, far faster than even a free fall should have carried her. The force of the impact slammed her teeth together, leaving her momentarily stunned at the pain and shock. Recovering did not take long, and now she was angry. The surface was bright enough for her to orient herself upward, and a quick glance at the ruins gave her the direction of the opposite shore. She didn't even consider going for the underwater chests, in spite of her current advantage. Those weren't what the Wandering War was going for. She kicked her legs, beginning to swim.
Enhance!
Rather than attempting to blast herself out of the water, she amplified the amount of force generated by each of her movements, allowing each stroke to carry her closer to the opposite shore. Even then, she was forced to surface to breathe before she reached the other side, taking a few precious moments to gasp in air before pushing herself forward. When she burst from the water, the Wandering War was already carrying one of the banners. She swept her right hand toward him in a slashing motion.
Push!
The wave of force blasted dirt and stones aside as it carried toward the cloaked figure, and stopped completely as he lowered his left hand in a chopping motion. He made a fist, and Velis could see the currents of air swirling around his hand for just a moment before he reopened his hand toward her. The blast of force, Her own blast of force slammed into her, knocking Velis back into the water. Gritting her teeth, Velis surfaced again as the wandering war calmly began walking a circuit around the lake.
Fuck! He's a motion shaper! That's not even slightly fair!
She shook her head, sending tiny droplets of water in all directions.
Okay, new plan. Can't hit him with motion directly. Looks like he controls motion effects with his left hand, but his right side is to the lake. Time to make some waves.
Velis rushed forward, closing most of the distance between them, ignoring the confused-looking second group of paladins who were still waving their own banner. She reached her right arm out over the water's edge and made a slashing motion toward the wandering war, grinning.
Push!
The wave blasted out toward him, but he spun in place, waving his hand downward. The wave crashed to the dirt before it reached him, but that was fine. Velis was already flying through the air in its wake. Her right hand grasped the wooden shaft of the banner before the wandering war reacted, deliberately placing her hand above his. Next, she put her left hand on his chest.
Push!
The force of the blast would have been sufficient to send any ordinary person flying, but he didn't budge in the slightest and gave no indication of having used any sorcery to block the strike. The shaft of the banner, however, was far less resilient. It snapped apart, with Velis's hand on the section carrying the banner itself. He reached for the banner, but Velis danced backward, grinning.
Too slow, Wanderer! Surge!
She blasted herself backward across the ground, sliding a dozen yards away, spinning around as the force dissipated. The strain on her muscles was beginning to slow her movements, but nevertheless she began to sprint around the lake. Glancing over her shoulder, she expected to see the wandering war right behind her, but he was still standing where he had been, holding the broken remains of the bottom of the banner in his hand.
Guess he's not much of a runner, or he pushed himself too much by redirecting my spells.
Nevertheless, she ran as fast as she could. Fortunately, she didn't have to circle the entire lake. There were bridges crossing it on both sides, and she barreled past another pair of candidates as she crossed back to the side where she had started. One of them made a weak grab for the flag as she passed, but she easily avoided it. As she arrived on the other side of the shore, Velis slowed, inspecting the flag. It still looked dry. Apparently, the Wandering War's effort to block her earlier attack had succeeded just in the way she had hoped. She slowed to an exhausted jog, flares of pain rippling through her legs as she arrived at the starting point and handed her flag to Lieutenant Morris.
"Well," he frowned, taking the broken shaft. "I suppose it's not wet,"
Velis let out a choking laugh.
"Good enough, I hope?"
"Good enough," he agreed. "Quite a show you made back there, too."
"Thanks. Mind if I sit down for a minute?"
The world spun briefly before Velis found herself lying on the ground. An hour later, Velis was still resting her head on Landon's lap. He was applying another cold compress to her forehead. Her newly acquired sigil of Eritar was pinned to her shirt. Fortunately, the Dawnfire's heat had been sufficient to swiftly dry her off.
"You really should get out of here,"
she told him for what felt like the hundredth time. He still only had a single pin, the one he had started with, and waiting with her had just cost him his chance at earning a pin from Colonel Wyndham. His appointment was minutes away, and he had no chance to get there in time.
"When you're back on your feet, sure," Velis frowned.
"Could be a while. I'm not good at feet right now."
"You really pushed yourself too much back there."
He shook his head, turning the cloth over and wiping her forehead with the opposite side.
"Would have been easier for you to just grab the other banner. No one else got there for minutes. The Wandering War ended up taking it, of course, after you left him in the dust. But you could have easily grabbed it and just walked away rather than skirmishing with him."
"Well, yeah, but that wouldn't have been fun, Landon. Gods."
Landon rubbed his forehead with his free hand.
"Right. Fun, of course."
"Look, if you're feeling too burdened by my mistakes, you can get going at any time."
"Nah, I'm exactly where I need to be."
"Whatever you say."
The other candidates had left the area long before. Lieutenant Morris had stayed a few moments to make sure that she was intact, but when she explained that it was just overuse of motion sorcery, he had shrugged and gone on his way as well. The wandering war had stared at her a long time as he departed. She had grinned cheerfully right back at him.
"Well, if you think you're up for it, we've still got a chance to make it to Sterling's little challenge. Maybe we'll win you a pin there."
Landon nodded silently. It was another half hour before Velis managed to regain enough feeling in her legs for Landon to drag her to her feet. Once she was standing, the pain intensified, but she grit her teeth and began her stretches. It was, in her experience, the best way to get her body working again. Several minutes later, the pair limped further away from the Paladin compound and toward the Perfect Stranger, where Sterling had announced his competition would be taking place. They found Sterling sitting with a pair of other candidates at a round table outside of the tavern.
"Hey, welcome!"
Sterling stood and waved as they approached. Velis recognized Eridus as one of the other two applicants with him, but once again Eridus just looked away as they approached. The other man was all bulk. He looked like he had more muscle than Velis's entire platoon. He had chalk-white skin, tattoos resembling a deer's antlers running up his arms, and a shaved head. He gave a simple nod as they walked closer.
"You need a hand there?" the muscular man asked.
"Nah, what might if you wanted to pull up some chairs for us, though?"
"Take mine. I'll go get another couple," Sterling offered, turning and heading inside the tavern.
Landon led Velis over to the open chair and set her down. She winced as she half-collapsed into the seat, leaning down to rub her left leg, which was aching the most.
"Any idea what we're up to here?"
Landon asked the table, standing nearby.
"Sterling hasn't told us much of anything yet. Think we're starting in a minute, though."
"Quite right,"
Sterling said, carrying a chair under each arm as he exited the tavern. He nodded to Landon as the other man grabbed one of the chairs from his hand and set it down next to Velis. Sterling set his own chair down on the opposite side of the table and folded his hands together.
"Excellent. I think this will probably be all of us. Shall we begin?"
The tattooed man reached across the table toward Landon.
"First introductions. I'm Alden Stone, from Scythus. I'm in Platoon 3 with John."
He gave a toothy grin, displaying impressively pristine teeth.
"Stone. It's a common name, but that might mean he's related to the Arbiter of Coronir. That could give him a significant advantage in the competition."
Landon shook his hand.
"Landon, Platoon 2, from Orlin, most recently at least."
Alden quickly exchanged introductions with the others. Everyone else seemed to know each other to some extent already.
"All right, now that we all know each other, let's get started. First, the rules. Quite simple, really. We drink until we can't drink any more. Everyone drinks at the same time, unless they can't. We'll take a mug about every 5 minutes. I'll order us all the same drink so no one gets to drink water while the rest of us are ailing."
He winked at the last word. Velis rolled her eyes at the pun.
"Any questions?"
Velis folded her arms and quirked an eyebrow.
"The prize?"
"Oh, yes, that. Each of us is going to throw in a pin. Winner gets the pot."
Landon stood up.
"Sorry, all. I'm out, then. Can't take the risk."
He looked down at Velis.
"You gonna be okay to get back without me?"
Velis waved a hand dismissively.
"Yeah, I'll be fine. A few drinks will do me good. You sure you don't want to stay? I could buy you in."
He shook his head.
"No, wouldn't want to risk you losing 2 pins.
"You think I could lose?"
He ruffled her hair.
"Of course not. I'll see you back at camp."
Sterling tipped his hat as Landon walked away.
"A shame. I was looking forward to seeing what he was capable of."
"I'm sure you've got more than enough competition right here. Shall we begin?"
The participants each put a single pin in the center of the table. Velis, after some thought, put the Cytera pin that Asphodel had given her in the center.
"I'd be no good in the Cytera branch. Maybe this competition is why Asphodel gave it to me."
Sterling ordered the first round of drinks. It was heavy ale, and after downing the mug, Velis felt like she had just eaten an extra lunch. Eridus looked green in the face after the first few sips. He stirred his finger in the mug for a few moments, then frowned and took another drink. Both Sterling and Alden downed the beverages with no trouble at all. 3 drinks later, Eridus was leaning heavily against the table. Velis rubbed at her head, trying to chase away the blur that was covering her vision. Sterling and Alden were bantering playfully, still barely seeming affected.
"So, Velis," Alden started, turning toward her. "You're a woman."
Velis held a hand to her chest as if shocked.
"Who told you?"
Alden let out a loud, echoing laugh.
"It's obvious. But why are you in this?"
"You mean the competition? There are plenty of female paladins, like, you know, the Colonel."
Alden shook his head.
No, female paladins are good. I mean the drinking game. Not to offend, but you are much smaller than we are, yes?"
She shrugged. He wasn't entirely wrong. Alden looked like he had about 2 or 3 times her mass. Maybe more like 5 times her mass when he was sufficiently blurry.
"That's not all that matters," she mumbled. "Besides, it's fun."
"Ah-ha! You are quite right! More drinks, John!"
Sterling shook his head at the exchange, but waved at a nearby attendant for another round of drinks.
"Okay, I'm starting to feel this pretty hard. Looks like Eridus is getting hit harder than I am. Or wait, is he?"
Eridus wasn't slouching quite as much as he had been a few minutes before. Velis frowned. He was stirring his finger in his drink again.
"Oh, that little bastard!"
She pondered his strategy for a moment. Could Sterling or Alden be doing the same thing? Could she do anything analogous herself?
"My sorcery resistance might be applicable here. If I can find the alcohol in my body, maybe I could expel it somehow. It's liquid, though. How could I get rid of it without making a mess?"
As she debated that, Sterling returned with more drinks, and the world grew a little bit heavier with each sip.
"Need to think. World uncooperative."
She raised a hand to her forehead, wiping it off, and noticed Eridus standing and rushing inside the tavern.
"One out!"
Sterling noted with a grin. He raised a hand and tilted his hat toward the tavern.
"Guess Eridus's bladder wasn't cooperating. Even if he was purifying his alcohol into water, it wouldn't help with that. We'll all have to deal with that at some point, I suppose, if I can keep my head up that long."
As Sterling put his hand back down on the table, Velis noted a glint of metal, a simple silver band turned around with a clear gemstone facing inward toward his palm.
"Well, well, guess Sterling has a little trick too."
Alden yawned and stretched loudly, cracking his back.
"It is good drinking. We should do more of this."
Velis nodded weakly, pressing a hand against the table and closing her eyes.
"Okay, alcohol. Where do you live?"
She tried to focus, picturing the dominions in her body as auras of shimmering light, but the mixture of inebriation and the remaining pain in her legs made it difficult to focus.
"Okay, not good enough. Too muddled. Take another drink."
She raised her mug and drank, focusing on the liquid as it poured down her throat. This made it easier to envision, a stream of green fluid passing into her body. She could sense similar components already within her stomach, small intestines, bladder, liver, and blood. Locking onto the parts that were alcoholic was more difficult. She knew her liver would already be at work on trying to break some of the alcohol down, but she had no way of discerning which components of the alcohol had already been metabolized. Without a common characteristic to search for, she couldn't concentrate sufficiently to identify which parts of the alcohol were toxic to her and separated from the raw water.
"You all right there, Jaldin? Still with us?"
Sterling was grinning at her when she opened her eyes.
"Just savoring the drink," she said. "More."
"We cannot argue with the woman," Alden pronounced. "More!"
Sterling chuckled and nodded, ordering more drinks.
"Need to think. Can't handle much more of this. Tired."
She laid her head down on her arms, closing her eyes for a moment. The sound of a mug slamming against the table jarred her back into alertness.
"More!"
Alden pronounced, turning to Sterling.
"I will see you drunk yet, my friend."
"Yes, keep dreaming, Alden.
It's good to keep your spirit alive, even as your strength falters.
Oh, you're taunting. It will do you no good.
The next round of drinks arrived. Velis stared at her mug, narrowing her eyes.
The enemy. I will defeat the enemy.
Her hand slapped against the side of the mug, missing the handle. Alden laughed loudly, grabbing the mug.
I will drink this one and give you a chance to recover. Yes, would not want you to be done so soon.
Psh, that's mine. Give it back,
Velis motioned. Alden shook his head, handing her the cup. Velis frowned as she lifted it to her mouth. Taking the big man up on his offer might have been a good strategy, but she wasn't going to take charity from someone who thought she couldn't hold her liquor just because she was a woman. She'd already beaten Aridus anyway. As her eyes shut again, she felt the liquid seeping into her more thoroughly. The greater quantity of alcohol seeping into her bloodstream made it easier to envision, bright green against the standard red composition of her blood.
Fuck, may as well try it.
She pressed her right hand against the wooden underside of the table.
Expulse.
She watched the green swirl and shift within her body, rushing to her right hand, where it remained. She shuddered momentarily as something like an electrical shock flickered in her mind.
Okay, think I did a bad thing.
The jolt of pain passed quickly, but the green aura in her hand failed to escape as she had envisioned.
Guess I can't pass liquid out of my skin that easily. Who knew? If I vomited, I could probably get it out that way, but that would probably lose me the contest. Running to the privy is out of the question, too. I need another way to get liquid out of my body.
She rubbed her hand along the underside of the table, subtly finding an exposed nail. She contemplated that for a moment.
Fuck that, this contest isn't worth tetanus.
Instead, she lifted her cup with her right hand, subtly unsheathing her sword just a fraction with her left. As she drank, she brushed her left thumb across the edge near the hilt, and then let the sword slide back into place.
Sharp blades leave painless wounds, they say. Bunch of bullshit.
Velis pressed the shallow wound against her pant leg, setting down her drink. She grinned as she closed her eyes.
Expulse.
The verdant aura flowed through her body, and she twisted it toward her hand and into her injured thumb. The blood flowing from the wound had nowhere near the volume of the alcohol, but she wasn't trying to expel the entire drink, just the poison that was clouding her mind and body. Drop by drop, the toxin dripped away. Her eyes fluttered back open, her mind beginning to clear.
Okay, boys.
Next drink. Hours later, Alden was finally defeated, lying asleep on the table. Sterling still looked invincible, untouched.
That was quite an impressive recovery you made.
Sterling leaned his elbows on the table, staring across at Velis.
I wasn't expecting anyone to compete with Alden in raw fortitude.
I love to surprise people. So it's your ring, yeah?
Sterling raised his left hand to his chest, an expression of mock shock on his face.
This simple family heirloom? Whatever do you mean, Lady Jaldin?
It's just Velis, or Dame Jaldin if you really have to.
She shook her head, which was starting to ache from the next set of accumulated alcohol. Even with her efforts to pool and bleed away the toxin, she had failed to rid her body of it entirely, and the wound had clotted and ceased to bleed long ago.
And anyway, it's a clever trick. I don't blame you or anything. A lot subtler than Aridus and his stirring.
A little subtler, but a lot more effective, it would seem. Or perhaps I was just built from sterner stuff to start with.
Velis grinned.
I suspect so.
Well, if you know my secret, I suppose we can call this game to an end.
He gazed toward the horizon.
The dawnfire is setting, and it will soon be time to meet with our companions.
Take off the ring and share a few more drinks with me first. Then we'll talk about a winner.
Sterling lowered his gaze, giving her a wolfish grin.
We have a deal.
Velis trudged toward the parade ground, rubbing her throbbing head as she walked. Three pins remained on her tunic. Ayndaren, Lysandri, and Eritar. Sterling walked cheerfully a few yards away, spinning every few steps to display the 6 pins on his shirt to the other approaching candidates. It had been a close thing in the end, but Velis wasn't willing to cut herself again to remain competitive. The injury itself wouldn't have bothered her much, but she doubted she could have concealed using the method a second time. She had solidly stomped Alden and Eridus, and that was more than good enough. More importantly, now she had valuable information on one more member of her platoon and 2 more competitors. Not a bad result for an afternoon. Landon was looking downcast when she caught sight of him, sitting on a rocky outcropping not far from the parade field where they had agreed to meet. He didn't seem to notice her approaching. His fingers toyed with the single pin on his tunic. As she approached, Velis reached up to her own set of 3.
2 is the minimum to pass. It won't be a good score for either of us, but we'll both make it.
Talion came into view a moment later, sitting down next to Landon, offering an outstretched hand with 3 pins sitting in it. Velis blinked, pausing in her step and lowering her hand. Talion had the faintest hint of a smile on his face as Landon took one of the pins, staring at it with an expression of disbelief. Talion's arms quivered slightly as he pushed the remaining 2 pins at Landon. His shirt was soaked through with sweat. It also had 7 pins attached to his right breast, 1 for each of the 7 gods.
How?
The metal sorcerer broke into a series of racking coughs, and that was enough of an answer.
He made more pins. He spent the entire day fabricating more sigils.
Velis broke into a laugh, drawing the attention of both of the sitting men, and rushed forward to embrace them both in a powerful hug. Before the officers took their places on the parade grounds, Velis watched as Talion walked to each of the candidates as they arrived and offered them a single pin of his creation. They were nearly indistinguishable from the official ones used in the tournament. Velis, in spite of already having enough to pass, accepted one of Talion's pins of Aendarin and wore it proudly.
Resh, Talion, that was a good play.
She noted as he paused at the dejected few who had lost their only pin during the day and offered them a 2nd one from his own supply. She realized that he must have made more pins than the total pool that they had started with, easily enough that he could have outfitted his entire platoon with a full set if he had wanted to. But he didn't only help his own platoon. Aside from favoring Landon with that first few, he didn't even seem to show the rest of them any sort of preference. And when he was done, Velis saw many of the other candidates looking at Talion with something she had seen before, once in what seemed like a different life now. Loyalty. And for the first time in nearly a year, she stood in line with companions at her side and felt the warmth of pride. Interlude 1. Riala 1. Shiver. Though Riala's garb left little more than her eyes exposed, she still felt the chill of the night frost in the air. She remembered the joy of her childhood self blowing softly into the air on nights like this one, seeing the ice forming from her breath. She absently waved a hand in the air, icy knives manifesting in front of each of her fingers and then vanishing as quickly as they appeared. There would be no joy in the cold of this night. She circled her target's home, a single-story building on the western edge of the market district. The house was a simple wooden structure with 1 door on the southern end and windows on the eastern and western sides. From the dimensions, she judged there to be about 3 separate rooms, a sign of simplicity but not poverty. The home lacked any exterior decoration. A logging axe sat beside a timber pile not far from the door, and she noted a resemblance between the wood in the pile and the beams of the house itself. A light source provided dim illumination in the western wing of the home. She knew her destination.
Shadows. Surround.
The shadows cast from the night frost's light upon the home bent and swirled around her, pressing against her clothing and exposed skin. So long as she remained within the darkness, only the keenest of eyes would detect her presence. The technique lacked the effectiveness of Jonan's talents during the day, but it would suffice for her current purpose. Though she had initially considered entering through the window nearest the light source, coming close enough to see through the glass would give her target a moment to see her within the contrast. It was a needless risk. She approached the front door, closing her eyes,